This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
6:45, quarter till 7. Tommy Tucker, WWL. One thing I learned in this job decades ago is that, I'll say civilian, although not really, that wouldn't be an appropriate phrase, but as just an everyday person that's not involved in this kind of work, things are in the news cycle and then they disappear and the average person thinks they go away when in fact they don't go away at all. And they're very serious issues. They just are not at the top of the news that day. And with that in mind, we're going to talk about Iran and U.S. And the U.S. nuclear deal and enrichment of uranium and nuclear weapons, which is a very complicated subject. And our friend Bruce Jennelson is here, professor of public policy and political science at Duke University, previously worked in the State Department and on the Middle East peace process. Good morning, sir. How are you, Bruce?
I'm well, Tommy. Hope you are as well.
I am. You know, the reason I went in that little thing before I brought you on is that I remember printing out the Iranian nuclear arms agreement to read it, and the business manager giving me the stink eye. That was before COVID. That was a long time ago because I printed so much stuff. Tell me the history of this nuclear agreement with Iran as it started, what happened to it, and where we are now, please.
Yeah, so in 2015, when Barack Obama was president, we negotiated an agreement with Iran to stop their development of nuclear weapons. And it's worth noting that wasn't just us, it was the Europeans and the Russians and the Chinese. Interesting to think, 10 years ago, we and the Russians and Chinese were still working together on some of these tough issues. We all wanted to prevent Iran from developing nuclear weapons. It wasn't a perfect deal. But it was actually working pretty well. And then when Donald Trump became president in 2016, he immediately pulled out of it. And while some of the political leaders of Israel had opposed it, like Prime Minister Netanyahu, I can tell you that a lot of their more hard-headed strategists, intelligence people, were of the view that it wasn't perfect, but it was working better than nothing. And in the period after we pulled out, Iran moved ahead. You know, they haven't developed nuclear weapons yet, but they got a lot closer. And so now it's back on the table, you know, to bomb Iran, to strike a deal. I mean, what should be done?
How close are they, do we know, to a nuclear weapon?
You know, it's very, and I'm not a scientist, right? But you're allowed to enrich uranium to a certain point for nuclear energy. And Iran, you know, wants nuclear energy that helps them save some of the oil and gas they produce for export and make money off of that. And they have increased it, and there are various estimates that said if there was no deal and they went full bore on this, they could enrich enough uranium to get to the point that it's what's called weapons grade. From there, you still got to figure out how to put it into missiles and all those sorts of things. But let's just say that if they wanted to and there was no agreement, within a year or two, they could have a nuclear weapon.
For people that don't understand, and that's also why I mentioned I printed out the agreement and got the stink eye from the business manager because I used so much paper and so much printer cartridge, they talked about uranium in there and enriched uranium, and people think it's either like a light switch on or off, and that is hardly the case when it comes to uranium and weapons-grade stuff, right, Bruce?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. That's why when the deal was struck in 2015, it wasn't like, okay, we got a deal. You had, you know, procedures and agreements on, checking on how things were going. And there's an international agency called the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, that most people in the world think is a pretty well-functioning international agency. And they would go in and they would check on things and there'd be cameras and everything. And, you know, you kind of a little bit of cat and mouse. But the details of these things are so complicated. That's why you needed so much paper. You know, because it's not just you will do this and you won't do that. You got to get into all the technical details, which is why when President Trump announces, hey, we're going to have a deal in 2 days, you almost worry that if they had a deal that he would say could give him a win in a news cycle, it wouldn't have the details fit and then it would fall apart. It could be worse than no deal at all.
Where do the Russians and the Chinese stand now? Because back in 2015, we were working together to keep Iran from having a nuclear weapon because nobody thought that would be a good idea, right? Where do they stand now with this?
You know, I think it's fair to say that neither of them wants Iran to have nuclear weapons because there are only, say, 8 or 9 countries in the world that have nuclear weapons: Russia, China, us, Israel, India, Pakistan, France, Britain. You know, and there's a certain amount of status to that. But right now they see it as our problem. You know, there are so many differences between us and Russia and China that it's like, Trump, you've created a problem for yourself. You know, you deal with it. Israelis, you deal with it. And even the U.S. and Israel may not be on the same page on this now. So they're not really willing to work with us on this because there are so many other things that we've had antagonisms. I mean, you know, with Russia, it's been their invasion of Ukraine, and with China, a whole bunch of other issues. So it's like, problem on your plate politically and otherwise, you know, we'll kind of keep an eye on it and maybe get involved at some later date.
So when it comes to nuclear weapons and we talk about, you know, who has them and who doesn't.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of, I don't know how, if you would use an index, Bruce, to describe it, or what level of nuclear weapon Iran could develop, and then you got the delivery system on top of it. Compare and contrast to, I don't think they'd be anywhere near close to us or the Chinese or Russia. I don't know, maybe more along the lines of Britain, Pakistan. I don't know. Tell me.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a threat to us. It would really be a threat to Israel. And interestingly, Tommy, you know, for a long time, you know, Iran and Saudi Arabia, one, you know, Sunni Muslim and the other Shia Muslim, you know, it had deep antagonisms. And the Saudis were almost as concerned about Iranian nuclear weapons as the Israelis. Saudi Arabia and Iran have actually started some diplomatic relations over the last 2-3 years. And by the way, the ones that helped them get started were the Chinese, not us. Mm. And so the notion right now of, you know, Saudis are feeling much less worried about this. They don't want it to happen, but they're not pushing us that, you know, you got to go bomb them if they don't make a deal. It's really about Israel's security. And Israel has a genuine basis for fearing Iranian nuclear weapons. But right now, I think, you know, Israel has so many problems. The former Ehud Olmert, who's the former prime minister of Israel, of the same political party as Netanyahu, wrote a scathing article in an Israeli newspaper earlier this week about what Netanyahu is doing in Gaza and everywhere else in the world that's hurting Israel more than anybody else. So it's really more an Israel-Iran, somewhat U.S. issue right now.
Let me take a quick break. I want to pick it up. We come back with Bruce Jennelson, professor of public policy, political science, Duke University. He worked in the State Department on the Middle East peace process. Been there, done that. More when we come back about Iran and the United States negotiating over nuclear weapons. When we come back, I'm going to find out what Russia and China would like to see ideally, or what they would feel about Iran having a nuclear weapon. I think that would cause problems for the United States, so they would probably be in favor of it, but would it cause problems for them? And also, who's running Iran? Traffic now, WWL. All right, 6:56, 4 till 7, back with Bruce Jennelson, professor of public policy, political science at Duke, worked in the State Department on the Middle East peace process, talking about Iran and nuclear weapons and where it stands now. When it comes, Bruce, to China and Russia, they were part of the deal in 2015. What would they ideally like to see now? Because I'm thinking if it causes problems for the United States, China's for it, right? Or not?
Pretty much. Yeah, and China has a bunch of agreements with Iran now. Some are economic. China, you know, buys a lot of oil and natural gas from Iran, but they also have various kinds of technology cooperation, a little bit of military cooperation. And Iran has actually been helping Russia a lot in the Ukraine war. It's been selling them drones, you know, as Russia continues to lose equipment because of the brave Ukrainians. And so they have relations with them, and they don't really want this to get in the way. And like you said, whereas 10 years ago it was a problem we all were concerned about, they see it as like lose-lose for us. If we attack Iran militarily, that's going to be hugely counterproductive. And right now, you know, with the issues between us and China, and even us and Russia, Trump's finding out that Putin is not exactly his friend. They're like, you know, you guys deal with it. Let's see what happens.
Foreign policy really is a complicated puzzle of a worldwide on a worldwide scale, is it not? You can't move one piece without affecting the other and that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, my wife says it keeps me employed and off the streets, you know, but you're right. You got to play chess and not checkers in this. Yeah.
So when it comes to the worst possible case, what happens if Iran does get a nuclear weapon?
You know, it's not inevitable. I mean, you think about it, countries, I mean, India and Pakistan, you know, came close to escalating war before, and they still haven't used nuclear weapons. It's a huge step. And if Iran were to use new weapons against Israel, Israel would use them against Iran. And then the fallout would be all over that region, not exactly like they're separated by those distances. But it's the sense of intimidation that comes with that that has countries afraid, and rightly so. You know, they're so different than anything else that's ever been invented. They are weapons of mass destruction. But it's not at all given that the day Iran has a nuclear weapon and can actually deliver it, right, develop it and then deliver it, that they, you know, use it against Israel or anybody else. But it kind of increases their leverage and that sort of thing.
So when it comes to the rest of the Middle East, considering that's their neighborhood, their backyard, how do they feel about Iran having a nuclear weapon, and what role do they play in this?
And that's why the Saudis have stepped up their diplomacy. You know, we sometimes think, oh, Sunnis and Shia, two competing versions of Islam, they can never get along. And the Saudis and the Iranians are saying, look, you know, in some ways the big guys are trying to make us bigger enemies with each other than we are. Let's see if we can start. They've had, you know, diplomatic exchanges, not so much heads of state, but like foreign ministers going back and forth. And let's manage our problems. And that's not a terrible thing, frankly. I think it's a very good thing for the region and for us, because it can help with one of the elements of stability in the region.
Thank you, Bruce. Appreciate it as always. Stay off the streets. Bruce Jenelson, professor of public policy, political science at Duke University. When we come back, we're going to talk about bears on the North Shore. And we'll talk with Mark Rosa, president and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. We'll help you manage your money with Mark. And today, we're going to be talking about 401ks and number one rule for becoming a millionaire in America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.